Batu, Barada, Nikto.
You must remember those words.
Gordon's alive.
You know what the Turing test is?
I know Kung Fu.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Stories Out of Time and Space. I'm your regular host, Scott Weatherly, and as always, I'm joined by my jive turkey partner, Julian Darris.
There were a lot of jive turkey jokes with me and my friends as we watched it.
Yes, we are watching a very early 70s iteration of I Am Legend. We are here to talk about Charlton Heston in The Omega Man. Very similar, Dr. Robert Neville has developed an experimental vaccine which makes him the only immune survivor of a biological catastrophe. A gang of homicidal mutants blame science for their condition and attempt to kill him. So that's sort of how we go with this one. This version has a much more Cold War feel to it. In fact, not just Cold War, it explicitly blames the fact that there's been interaction, that the Cold War turned hot. Neville is no longer just a... Oh, no. Firstly, in the book, not a scientist. He's a factory worker. Then he becomes a scientist. Now he's a military scientist, because why not? And we are starting with Charlton Heston. So, Julian, what are your initial thoughts on The Omega Man?
This is not a great movie. But yeah. I will say there are things in this that I like better than the Vincent Price version. I think, to me, Charlton Heston is also a weak point, but I think he's clearly playing like a version of James Bond. The quips get really annoying really fast.
Yeah.
And there's even a reference to Bond, at which point I was like, oh, they knew what they were doing. I was already thinking this. Yeah, I mean, there's a slow motion scene as he jumps a motorcycle. So, I mean, I would say the Bond stuff, it's a lot more action-y than, you know, other adaptations. But I do like seeing Charlton Heston in the penthouse and sort of like how he's concocted this life. You know, that stuff is okay. The other thing that is like shocking about this film is how out of date it is about race, and painfully so. Really uncomfortable. Yeah, so what are your general impressions?
We will get to the whole race thing, because it thought it was progressive. Like, its writers thought this film was progressive and stuff. I think the thing is, having discussed, you know, the character of Robert Neville in the last sort of, like, I thought Vincent Price was miscast. I buy, at least in this one, I will buy that Charlton Heston has survived for 3 years on his own. I'm like, yeah, all right, your casting choices are better. I buy it that he's a bit more action-y. I'm going to kind of struggle with the fact he is a scientist, but fine.
Yes.
That side of things, I'm still going to struggle with.
He does not have the demeanor of a careful scientist now.
Heston does become a weak link. And again, it's where I think he's better cast as Neville, but I think the surrounding story is not suited to Charlton Heston playing that version of the character. It's an odd mix, this film is. Some of the things I find most hilarious is he goes to the, like, Charlton Heston watching Woodstock. I can't believe Charlton Heston would ever watch anything with hippies, like, intentionally. And also, like you say, the relations with, so it's not Ruth in this film, it's Lisa, who is not initially infected, we'll get to that, but is like a fellow survivor, an African-American woman. And I don't think I've ever seen a relationship on film that's this awkward. at
That was a
times.
word I was hoping you'd use. I do think that's what I would use too.
It's quite clear that neither Heston or Rosalind Cash, who plays Lisa, like, I can't believe, I don't think they talked to each other off camera. Like, they clearly never spoke to each other.
Yeah, they don't like, there are certain romantic partners in films where you think they just don't have chemistry in real life. This is the case where you think, oh, they hate each other.
There must have been a point, like, when they get through the casting, like, the fact that this reached screen and no one sort of went, this isn't working, like, can we get somebody else? Would have been, again, awkward, because obviously he's an African American. I think that's, it's clearly, I'm not suggesting that Heston is racist in any way. I'm not saying that. I'm not going to allege anything. I would just say the way he acts around her may have indications of his feelings towards people of an African American persuasion. Let's leave it at that. It's a really awkward film at times because of these things. But also, I don't understand. There's a whole bunch of stuff that goes on in this film that kind of does just. I would say the first 15, 20 minutes are actually really good. When it's just Charlton
Well, you
Heston
know,
on his own, it's actually really good.
no, I agree. And a lot of the fun that we had talking about the world, the flesh and the devil, right? Which is sort of just a lot of that is just a person in New York going around and, figuring out things and, and that stuff was the strongest part of that film for both of us. I think that stuff here also works. Here, at least that film was more conscious of collecting books and paintings. Here, that also was, I think, in some ways more progressive about race. But here, it's interesting. Here, there are films and things like this. Because it's Heston, maybe, I mean, it's far more preoccupied with like a chess match. And I think that chess metaphor works as a metaphor for the film too, that it really is fundamentally Neville and joined by a few other survivors who are not infected, with a, organized group of vampires who are clearly infected. There's no undead, right? They're just infected people who are light averse. They're not really vampires per se, right? There's no blood drinking in either of these two versions. But here they're just some kind of infection that makes them photosensitive. I don't mind that, but it is a little bit sort of straightforward and action-y oriented to make it, one group versus the other, the hero versus the antagonist.
Yes, this is the weird thing about this film is it really is a small film, but the point of both the book and the Last Man on Earth is the ending of the of both of those opens up to be saying, like, you think you're the last man, but there's this whole other thing going on outside of your scope of understanding. With this film, as you said, it's literally like, oh, the world has turned to shit. We don't know what is going on. Everyone could be dead apart from these few people living in, I think it's obviously Los Angeles. So you're sort of like, okay, cool. Like, that's it. There's just these two warring factions, and one of them just happens to be this guy, Robert Neville. It never sort of feels like, there's no reveal at the end of they're organizing the bigger society. It's just a sort of like, we are a cult, that blames science, and we're going to kill everybody off that. I mean, I mentioned, I think maybe off air or previously, these people remind me of the cult in Beneath the Planet of the Apes, where you find that they all worship a nuclear bomb. It's that kind of like, oh, it's just mutated humans and they're a faction and that's it. I don't know. They don't really feel like a threat. And I don't understand at any point why Heston hasn't just sort of killed them all methodically. Like it you've sort of written, they have scenes of him going out and finding and doing a clearing. He calls it clearing blocks after block, but there's no sort of thing of him killing off people, sleeping in the daylight. Like they sort of suggest it, but it never quite goes there. So I don't
Yeah,
understand
they
what these
show him
mutants do.
killing. They do show him killing, some people, but yeah, it's very muted. And the other thing is that sort of macho bravado of Heston. It seems like he's happy to kill, people that he finds, right? Or vampires that he finds, right? Or not vampires, but infected, right? Members of the family that he finds. He's happy to kill them, but then every night they surround his house, and he just sort of gets irritated with them. They're intelligent enough to sort of rig catapults, which it's always a little bit like the Amish, right? Where it's like, oh, when did technology become technology for you, right? Like, this is an arbitrary year, right?
Well, yeah, it's
We
true
don't
because
want to use cars, but we're fine with catapults.
levers are still a technology. We just it's
Right.
yeah. No,
Clothing is a technology. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Weaving, you have to weave all that sort of stuff together. Like, I don't know, it feels odd in that respect because one of the things that sort of does one of the things that sort of bothers me about this film compared to the others, and it's sort of in the book as well, is in the book it suggests that his house is surrounded and they're animalistic vampires, so he couldn't on his own, he could not take them out on his own, right? So he sort of hunkers down in his house, it's a fortress and he's safe. That's the sort of the purpose. You sort of get that idea from Last One on Earth with Vincent Price, that's kind of the point, that at night he hunkers down in that house and he's all safe. That's presented here in this, but because it's sort of a building with multiple floors and he has this sort of penthouse thing set up with barbed wire across it, and there is this element of me going, you've got a kind of like a and you've got a sniper rifle for a start that can see in the dark. Why are you not just picking these people off at night?
Well, that's what I was going to say, was that they do show him hunting down people during the day, but then they attack him at night, including catapults and whatnot. And then it seems like when he gets annoyed, then, this is what I mean by the macho kind of male entitlement. It's like, well, I'm just annoyed at their ruckus. And then he goes and fires almost blind, to basically scare them away and disperse them. Like you say, I mean, he has a sniper rifle with a night scope, for God's sake. I mean, pick some of them off. I don't know. I agree with you. It's a little bizarre.
But I do like little bits, I think, with Heston, when he's out doing his bits and pieces and sort of the phones start ringing and he has to remind himself that there aren't, he says to himself, like, there are no phones ringing. Now, that's a good shot. I like that. But also, like, he has this bust of Caesar there that he has that I like that. This is, it's his talking companion. But also, it's like, he goes, oh, it's Sunday. I dress up for dinner on a Sunday. And he's wearing this, like, ridiculous, like, velvet. He turns up, like, Austin Powers kind of thing with, like, frilly shirts and all this other stuff. Like, all that's kind of fun. Like, it's sort of this eccentricities of a man who's sort of trapped on his own, but he's still going to do these sort of weird things just to keep himself entertained. So I'm down with all that. I'm fine with all that. And then he gets taken, and you have that whole thing of it builds up to him being taken and taken to the football stadium where they're going to execute him and burn him alive. And you get several lines in that. There's other bits as well, but you get this. There's several lines there that sort of tell you about what happened before. Because one of the things Matthias, who's the leader of this sort of mutated cult, says, this is where they brought them to burn them. So you're like, oh, shit. So other people, so there was a time when there was an organization that was trying to destroy this thing, and they did burn the bodies, and they did it in a football stadium. That's kind of dark. But for me, this is the turning point. Like, this is that's act one. Act one, up until that point, that's act one. the moment Neville is rescued, because you've already met. Oh, because I also say the moment, yeah, because I want to go back. Obviously, he's met Lisa in a weird way. But the moment they introduce from that rescue, the group, this film just falls apart for me, in all honesty. But I do want to go back to, I forgot to mention, because obviously he's already seen Lisa, because he's been out shopping. He's been out running as well. He goes out for a run
Yeah.
because health and Hester's a
Well,
very, he's a very healthy guy.
just as a side note about that, he says he's finished a mile in under 4 minutes.
Yes.
That's a ridiculous time. Like, a
Yeah.
6-minute mile is really good. I mean,
Yeah.
Charlton Heston is not doing this in, 3:55 or something. They just kind of show him finishing it up.
Yeah. And barely winded as well, we should highlight. And then he goes into like a department store, doesn't he? He sort of changes his tracksuit, and you've got to see him where he picks up a yellow and he's like, oh, it's not my colour, so he's looking for something else. So I kind of like this sort of dismissiveness and how he sort of he picks things up. I'm fine with all this. It's actually quite good. But the way he then sees this Lisa, this woman that's been watching him, and she hides amongst the mannequins in possibly one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Because not only does she hide, she literally turns to look as he spotted me. And you're like, well, you shouldn't have moved, really. How should you? Like, it's all very silly. But then she runs off. But then when she runs off, she stops to watch him come out the building and then runs off again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. This whole section of introducing his characters, it's like, there's, again, we talked about it being clunky. I find this one very clunky with a lot of things where it's sort of like, well, this has to happen, but it's nothing ever feels like it flows properly. It sort of feels like it literally reaches a point where, like, we've done act one, we've now got to move into act two, and it's sort of, we're going to transition, and that's it. And, it's, I don't know what your thoughts are, but it's, I just feel that transition from bit to bit all the time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I think that the family is a weaker point for me. And especially the sort of racial component there. I would say that, you're sort of charmed by Charlton Heston as the last man and sort of talking to himself. I like that he talks to himself. I like that there are these hints that he's gone a little insane. But I feel like they're always played for laughs. They're always played in a kind of macho way. Like
Oh,
it's
yeah.
clear that, yeah, and that macho thing gets in the way for me, right? Like it's like, yeah, I'm eccentric. I love him, you mentioned in the department store, sort of picking up stuff that he wants to try on and just throwing it on the ground, right? Because it doesn't matter. And we've seen some of that in other films, but I do sort of enjoy that. I enjoy, him sort of talking to people who aren't there or sort of trying to stay sane. But it all comes off as sort of Heston playing Bond. It all comes off in this kind of macho way. Like, yeah, I'm a little eccentric, but really it's all infused with this, macho quips as
Yeah.
opposed to I've lost my mind. Which is
Yes.
what I wanted to, I would be, think would be more successful.
Yeah. What I think's interesting is, because there is a lot of quippiness, and I agree with that. And playing it down, like, he crashes his car, and the first things you see him do is crash his car, and he says, like, well, there's never a cop around when you need one, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so there's a lot of that that goes on as he buys the new, he goes and finds himself a new car and all these other bits. But I think it is overdone throughout sort of certain parts. However, I think because there's then the moment where he sees the payphone and he hears the ringing and all this other stuff, and then he has that moment of, I have to remind myself that there is no phone ringing, and he has to sort of block out this noise that's broken through his psyche. To me, it plays a little bit different in that all that quipping is his like coping mechanism. Like he knows it's all a bit daft and a bit silly, and it is overly macho. Like it definitely is. Well, maybe Heston doesn't know it's a coping mechanism. I don't know, but that's how it plays for me. For like for the character is
Yeah.
all that quipping is like he has to do that and play along with his own sort of like slight quirkiness that he's or the eccentricities that have started to accumulate. Because if he doesn't, the moments of like hearing the phone ringing or other things will break through. And that's what's really scares him. So that's I can see that, but there's not enough. There should be more of that where, like seeing Lisa, like he should be like, well, that's not the first person I've seen run away. And they're always a hallucination. Like there needs to be some acknowledgement of, oh, I've had other moments of like mental breakdown or something. It would be more
No, I
interesting.
agree with you. And I like the idea that Charlton Heston doesn't know about the character. That does feel dead on, right? Like he wants to play it as a macho leading man. But really that's not what the script is. Yeah, outside of this jogging bit, you know. Yeah, so I mean, you know, for me, really, it's the family that is more the problem of that setup. That, you know, they have these kind of like cat eyes, you know, and they're also like supposedly, you know, sort of a little albino. But the way this is accomplished with special effects is a dusting of powder. You know, it's very clearly what it is. You know, the main bad guy has, you know, a second in command who is black, and you know, the anti-science stuff doesn't really make sense. This sort of like tying, I feel as if the family's sort of unthinking, we just want to tear the world down, which is really their motivation, right? I mean, they're the people talked about in Dark Knight, or so they just want to see the world burn, right? They are not complex villains. And I feel like tying that to a black character, you know, who speaks in a black vernacular is a little uncomfortable.
Let's get to that bit.
There's one line in particular.
It's the dialogue in this film, it feels very 70s. And you're talking about Zachary, the lieutenant, I suppose, to Matthias. And there is this sort of like, I don't see race anymore. I'm colorblind because we're all albino, kind of thing. But you're right. But what I find is interesting is like you said about Zachary using certain terms and having sort of colloquial. He's also the first to turn to gun violence, and he's also the only one that they send in alone to Neville's house later on, where I'm a bit like, the joke of like, look, yes, so the black guy's the first one to try and use a gun, and also he's the one that the family clearly have nominated to go in on his own on a suicide mission. All of that feels really uncomfortable to me watching it today. But I don't think.
My impression is that he is hiding the gun
Oh
because that's
yeah.
technology. Yeah.
But that's the
So,
point. But it's
but
almost,
again,
it
that makes
feels
it worse.
worse. It makes it worse. Exactly. That's my
Yeah.
point. Is like Matthias is like, we just have spears and weapons, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna shoot this guy. Like it's all, oh, like this feels like,
Who
I'm
he
not.
calls a honky. I mean,
Yes,
he's like,
exactly. That was I
yeah.
wasn't gonna try I wasn't gonna use the term, but yes, exactly. And I'm like, oh, like this isn't, you're gonna get an interracial relationship and an interracial kiss in this. And I think they're kind of
Right.
proud of that. And then you're going like, yeah, you're kind of giving with one hand and taking with the other. Like, don't pat yourselves on the back just yet. Because the other
Yeah,
side of things.
that overall message is like, there are good ones worth kissing, especially if you are, I mean, as they continuously say, you are the last people on earth, right? Like, under those circumstances, I suppose miscegenation is okay. On the other hand, a lot of blacks are violent, uncontrollable people, seems to be the message here. Like, they're still bad ones. I mean, it's really uncomfortable for me watching this. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, but that's the point. But I think this goes for the other side as well. I think this goes for the survivors as well. This kind of dialogue and... because it's been several years, this highlights again, it's been 3 years since sort of everything happened. But there's this, when he meets sort of Lisa, she's basically out of some kind of blaxploitation film, you know, mm-hmm. in her approach and everything, sort of like angry black woman. But also, is it Dutch, the sort of the kid, the doctor that's with him as well? He's yeah. like, I was a senior, he was a doctor in his senior year of medical training. And he was actually wanting to be posted in a military research facility. That he says that to John Heston, that's what he was looking to do. Yet he still talks and acts like like a hippie. And I'm like, yes, there'd be times when you know, you would have to adapt, but like you wouldn't completely change your mannerisms and everything. Like, I cannot believe this kid ever went to was a senior in a medical institution and was ready to go on a military placement. Like, all these things keep happening. I'm just like, I'm not buying any of this. Like, this feels so like you're trying to be hip and like relevant that like you're kind mm-hmm. of messing with this, not just the story, but like all the characters feel misplaced, and it really starts to damage and make the film grating quite quickly by about halfway through.
Yeah. That group I find totally confusing. And, you know, they're led by Dutch. Dutch is apparently their leader. And when we first meet them as a group, he's got women surrounding him. He's the only man of the group, really.
Yeah.
You know, there's a boy, I think. But, you know, he seems like, it's like, is this an expression of free love? Or, you know, like, it's very hippie. But it's also like, is he a cult leader? Is he having sex with these women? What's going on here, right? But then Lisa is really interested in, you know, hooking up with Charlton Heston. And, you know, or becomes interested.
Mm.
And despite their lack of chemistry, so to speak. And, you know, I'm thinking, is that okay with Dutch? How does that group work? Well, you know, I mean, he's this motorcycle, and then he disappears on the motorcycle. He seems to always be gone. Do they really have precautions, or is there only precaution that they're just out in the middle of nowhere? I mean, I don't know. And then, you know, when Dutch hears about, you know, the boy being the young man, I should say, being cured, he, you know, runs down the hill like a kid. And I'm thinking, he's the leader of this group, you know, so. What is the dynamic with that group? And I know what you're saying. It's clearly referencing, you know, hippies, but the counterculture. But, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And then you get into, you know, besides the racial themes that are problematic, now we have the, you know, idea of we need a red-blooded macho man to save those dirty hippies.
Yes. Yeah, guns don't kill the family. Charlton Heston kills the family. that's the thing, isn't it? Like white saber, this is really sort of, because again, he's that perfect. He's a doctor. He's a scientist. He's also an action star. You know, it's all that thing rolled into one. And there's a moment when when Dutch, they sort of say, "But we know who you are, and we know about your work." And he recites this, all the work that Dutch has done. And Neville says to him, he says, "That's a good recitation, but do you know what it means?" And I'm thinking, Charlton Heston doesn't know what it means. Like this, you know, I don't believe he, you know, he's read the line, but I don't think he ever understands any of this. And so, yeah, there's a lot of that where I'm just sort of like, okay, this feels kind of silly. But you're right about the group as well. Like the group, like when you meet this group, There's no sort of order, there's no cohesion, and that's fine. Like, if that's what they're going for, like, no, we have no leader, we're all just, whatever. And it all gets directed to saving Richie, this lad who's been infected. And then you find out that, that's the whole thing of Neville's blood is kind of like a vaccine. He's antibodies. But again, I'm going like, yeah, but is he the same blood type? Is this how this works? Like, this doesn't make any great deal of sense. Like, it's all really simplified and it makes no sense. And, da 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 da. So, yeah, it's all this introducing the group kind of confuses this film more than anything.
Yes.
It really confuses what's supposed to be this film's supposed to be about.
Yeah, and it doesn't really accomplish much for the plot, right? I mean, really, that group outside of Lisa and Richie have no function in the plot.
No.
They don't really do anything except show up at the end. So there's this group. Lisa is obviously there as the love interest, and then there's Richie, and Richie is there to demonstrate, you can save somebody with your blood, which just underlining the racial problems.
Yeah.
The line I'm referring to is when Charlton Heston explicitly says, "Pure white pure Anglo-Saxon."
Yeah.
I thought, oh, there's cringe, and then there's that.
Just be grateful he didn't go in for a high five. I mean, that would have really made things awkward. Yeah,
And
it's
he's saying this to the black woman who's
yeah.
clearly uncomfortable about this interracial relationship. I mean, it's really, really awkward. And then Richie is kind of played. I think that the actor, Eric Lanneville, is to his credit, is trying to give him, real interior space, but he's been written in a very sort
Simple
of
way.
simple way.
Yeah.
And he reaches out that he wants to reach out to the family, and he winds up being captured and killed, right?
Yeah.
So isn't the point of that, like, you can't reach out to your enemies, right? This is a
Well,
Cold War movie. The
yeah.
Russians will murder you.
No, I think this is where, again, you said about the message of the film, because the fact is, Richie was ill. He was transitioned. You see, like, they actually show you, like, his skin is, he's, because he was obviously an African-American lad. They show you that there's that dusting of powder. Like, he is turning into one of the family. Like, the mutation is setting in, whatever the illness is. Fine. The light sensitivity and all that. But Neville's
His
blood
eyes have
saves him.
changed.
His eyes have changed, yeah. Neville's blood saves him and brings him back. But there's a scene, and this is again like where you think like Charlton Heston doesn't get the point of this. One of the things that this Richie says is, are they that wrong? Like, science, it did bring us to the point of destruction. Like, I'm not entirely convinced that they're, but the method won't be wrong, but the point they're making could be valid, is his point. And he describes this, he says it's Charlton Heston's Neville on the roof. And again, like, he challenges Neville and says, you got basically like 50 caliber guns on the corners. This, why have you not killed them? If they're that much of a problem to you, like, why have you not killed them? And he kind of just laughs it off, pats him on the head, and is like, oh, you make me laugh, kid. And the kid's like, no, I've got a valid point. Like, talk to me.
Yes.
And Charlton Heston sort of laughs and walks off. And it's so bizarre. And so when, but they want to sort of highlight Rich, as you said, with internal space. Like, he makes this choice of, like, he tries to sort of form a bridge between their group of survivors and the, because he knows where they're staying. Like, he's seen with them, and he tells Heston, like, oh, I know, of course, they're in the Civic Center. But he's going to go to try and form this bridge, and they kill him. But I think the point that the film tries to make is they're both as bad as each other. That's the only thing I can take from it is, they try and give Neville this heroic thing of like, well, I'm not going to kill them unless it, but they're just going to kill Richie. But I'm like, yeah, but you're kind of doing other things that's terrible. So you said about, is it this thing of like not reaching out because you're not like them? I think there's an element of, because it wants to be a hippie-ish film. I still think there is a hippie-ish element to this of, At the moment, warmongering, because it's Matthias, who is a warmonger from the mutant side, versus Neville as a warmonger from the sort of survivor side. Just as bad as each other. That's kind of like the only thing I can take from it. And Richie got killed in the crossfire kind of thing of like, you know, they won't trust the other. But if you they had have sat down and talked, they could have probably survived together. That's and I'm really stretching to make that happen as a sort of a message.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure I buy it.
Neither do I,
You
but
know, I mean, I think that that's a reading. I don't think that's, you know, an irresponsible reading. I do think they could have worked it out, right? There's no reason why they couldn't have cohabitated and you know, figured out how to moderate technology in some way, you know, to make a civilization. But you know, you mentioned that scene where Charlton Heston kind of insultingly pats Richie on the head, right? And walks off, and his demeanor is one of like, oh, you're such a naive little kid, you know,
Yes.
like I'm a macho man, and you know, sometimes you just gotta kill your enemy, and you know, you don't seem to understand that. That's not the way the world works, little hippie. And it's not mean, but it is entitled. It
It's
is arrogant.
dismissive. Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And so to me, you know, and he goes to rescue Richie, right? So, I mean, he is the savior figure. He is the hero figure. He is the, you know, white savior, the macho, you know, red-blooded American male. And I think it's really hard for the movie, whatever it may intend, to escape these tropes because those tropes are so woven into the plot of this film, not just Heston's performance.
No, I think Heston epitomizes that problem, though, isn't it? Like, again, if you were to remove Heston from the picture and have someone less overtly macho, it would reduce it and you might have a bit more flexibility in that thing. Explain something to me, though, because I think I may have missed something. So they have the relationship building up between Neville and Lisa, inexplicably. Because again, at no point do they ever, at no point is there like a turn where you're like, oh, I clearly see that they're now attracted to each other, and let apart from when the script tells me that they are.
Yeah,
But
the
then she.
turn is they just have a couple flirtatious lines and then, you know, stop to address the attack and then come back and basically she says, "Let's fuck," right? Like that's how this goes down, everyone, you know.
That's pretty much it. Like, the script needs them to be together to form a relationship that we've clearly not been there. But after this, she goes out and she sort of, you know, she's getting dressed up to go out and do some foraging. Like, she's going out to look for different bits and pieces or whatever. All right. And she puts on this like headscarf, which becomes important. And then, as you say, like, you know, we find out that Richie's been has run off trying to speak to the family, and Neville goes off to try and save him, unsuccessfully, because we see that Richie is killed, and that but he, Richie has given information about where Neville is and what's going on, so they've sort of formed this group and they're now marching to Neville's house. All fine, understood, not a problem.
Literally carrying torches.
Yes,
A
amazing.
mob carrying torches.
Yes. However, Lisa then sort of steps into shot, and you're like, oh, that's Lisa. She better move. Like, you know, this is her under threat. And then she steps into the light and removes her headscarf to reveal that she is now infected. And in the time that it has taken to try and in an attempt to reach Richie, has been fully infected and turned. Now, when did that happen? How did that happen? And have I missed something that tells me that she was already, you know, is this like one of those zombie films where someone gets bitten but hides it under their coat or, you know, in a sleeve or something? No, okay, good. I
No,
would
it's not
really,
that close.
struggled by this. I was like, when the hell did she turn?
Well, she could have gotten infected from Richie. And
Fine, but there
I
was no.
often wondered, like, why are they not taking precautions, right? Like, she's right up there next to Richie. But as you say, she doesn't show any signs, and then she goes out, basically for groceries and comes back and doesn't come back, right? She's infected. Making this even worse, I mean, this is just a reveal, right? I mean, and of course, I'm watching it and I'm cringing because of all of the dialogue about black hair, I mean, so covering it up and then revealing it, I mean, this is holds a special weight in the black community. But then she when you she first walks into the shot and she's carrying bags of groceries, basically supplies for them to run off. So clearly, if she is infected, she's still carrying that. But she wanders into the shot, and of course, instantly I'm thinking, like, it's night now. Why have you, it's totally blackout. Why have you stayed around until night to be scared by this mob? And then she sort of just drops the groceries and reveals she's already infected. Well, if you weren't infected, why did you stay out at night? If you were infected, why were you still getting the groceries? I mean, why do you respond? I mean, so you're right about the logistical problem of how fast it happens. It's just a dumb reveal. It's just a surprise she's infected, right? I mean, and it is one of the most illogical kind of, ways of doing it imaginable.
I thought I literally thought I'd missed something. Like I went back and I was like, I've missed a drop line or I've missed something that tells me that she was at risk or something. And there isn't, is there? That and I was just like, oh, okay. Because if when they all turn up and start attacking his house, and they get into that, no, she this is the thing as well. This is like the equivalent of the reveal in Last Man on Earth and in the book of, oh, she's in, Ruth is infected, is that he's given her a key to the apartment, so she lets them all in, and now she, but more than her being infected and turning it, she's been completely indoctrinated as well.
Yes, that is utterly bizarre.
She's now like, no, give them a chance. They have this. She's on completely on their side, and I'm completely confused by that. But it breaks basically breaks into a big fight. We get, this is the big sort of like finale kind of piece, and he grabs Lisa and takes her with him. And I'm kind of confused as to why. Like, I know they've got this relationship. Is he saying, oh, I'm going to save you because he's done it with Richie, so he's going to do a blood transfusion or something? Fine. But then, no, it just, she kind of still goes with him. At no point does she sort of pull back or resist until they get outside when they're stood by the fountain. And it's, this is where this film, like I said, this film starts for, this is terrible. This whole final act is dreadful. It's some of the worst put together. It makes no sense. Like, none of it makes any sense. They're smashing up his apartment, and Matthias is like, this is, this is what you get. And you're like, for what? I don't understand any of this. Like, why have you, I'm at the point of saying, like, why didn't you just leave the town? Piss off somewhere else. Like, this, none of this makes any sense.
Yeah, well, Neville was about to leave, right?
No, but them, I
When this
don't know why,
happens.
I don't know why
But
they are still in
yeah.
the city.
Well, I mean, they're mad that he's killed them, but it's clearly just like a blood feud between them at this point. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. I mean, a few things are very clear to me. One is that as soon as you get infected, you start to believe the cult stuff as part of that infection. That's just a magical thing that happens, right? So she's been, obviously she's the romantic partner of Neville. But as soon as she's infected, she instantly is spouting cult lines, right? Now, from a Cold War perspective, you could say this is, reflective of stories of brainwashing, especially in Vietnam. But it shouldn't happen instantly, right? It's not, she's been a rational player. Why does she instantly convert to the cult? That's very bizarre. But then equally, Charlton Heston is such a man's man, especially with that Anglo-Saxon blood, don't you know, that just being around him makes a girl swoon and find the strength to battle their cult-like status. I mean, if Charlton Heston had only been able to talk to the Manson family, all the girls at least would have repented and seen, what a real exemplar of masculinity offered.
I can see the attraction. Bare-chested Charlton Heston is clearly the way to go. You're right. That's the thing. It is just the macho thing, isn't it? But it sort of adds to the sort of almost like the dumbness of this is that thing of sort of like, because you've still got this whole thing of a blood transfusion, and they're going to use it because Richie could now be used as because he's been cured, so he's now a vaccine, all this other stuff. I don't know. It just kind of like this whole ending. I'm trying to sort of like when they're stood by the fountain, as you've said, like she's been dragged out, like but barely any resistance into the street, and they have this kind of conversation, and then Matthias comes out on the balcony. And hurls a spear at.
The most unconvincing throw, right? I mean, like, in fairness, we ribbed The Last Man on Earth for a lot of production problems. This throw is one of the most unconvincing throws, and then it's cut to like a really good throw that kills him. Pinpoint accuracy, right?
That's
Because
my problem
there's
in
no
this.
racial undercurrent about spear throwing, by the way. That's not charged.
Well, it's the fact that like you say the first is the bad editing because it's one of those I love in it films where like someone looks like they're throwing it and then you cut to a scene of someone looks like they're being stabbed and you're like, oh, that javelin never traveled in the air. And that's how
Yeah, it
it
made it 12 feet. Right.
but it hits and you say it's spot on. It hits Neville in the heart and he starts to bleed out. And again, I'm sort of like, why? This feels like such a letdown as a confrontation between Matthias and if you are trying to go for that, they are both as bad as each other kind of ending or something. You need both Matthias and Neville to die in this version. That's where it's got to end. But it's. So, but he doesn't. Matthias just is in the house, and Lisa sort of just leaves because he's bleeding out. So the family have won. That's the point. Like, the family has won really. Until
Well,
the one.
sort of. But but the survivors take Lisa and they arrive, and Charlton Heston has. And this is the only foreshadowing at all, and it's not really that Lisa could turn, is that Charlton Heston, having saved Richie, Neville rather, makes a basically like a flask of his own blood, right? Which of course has to be refrigerated, right? I mean, but it's clearly just, water. And so the other survivors show up, and Charlton Heston's dying action is to pull this from his jacket and then collapse. And they take it, and presumably that is going to be used to cure Lisa. So, yeah, Matthias is one, but humanity will survive, and there is in fact a cure. And Charlton Heston has died. Let's just be clear. Utterly Christ-like,
Oh
right?
that! Oh God, yes, that final shot. Twice though, this is the thing. Twice they give him a crucifixion death in this film. So when they try to burn him in the football stadium, like he is posing not just with his arms up, like the way his legs are sort of leaning and everything. Like they are going for a crucifixion pose, like no doubt. And then they mimic that in the final shot of this film, which is a nice shot. I mean, it's a well-framed shot, everything looks good. But again, it's that thing of like Anglo-Saxon savior, that's Anglo-Saxon savior. So he's an ass, is what we're saying. Yeah, it can't. It's just the point
Well,
of. No, go
you
on.
say it's a nice shot, but then it goes inverted, right?
Yeah.
Needlessly, for the credits. I mean, almost in a parody of 1970s movies or something. Yeah, it Zack Snyder thought this and saw this movie and thought, I can outdo your Jesus images.
Hold my beer. The thing is, again, the whole point of the book, as we've said, is that the dehumanization of Neville and the fact that he becomes the monster. He becomes I Am Legend because he is the factor. He becomes the other, and the norm has taken over, and that's kind of a like I say, in a perfunctory manner, he's sort of presented in Last Man on Earth. But there's nothing in this. And I've, because there is no I Am Legend. To who? Because Matthias, that's just like, we've beaten you. But now we've got to go after these other survivors, which means there may be more people in the world that are survivors. So what's the point of all this?
There are more people who survive, right? I
Yeah.
mean, there's no way these are the only people, right? I mean, the other thing is there are no vampires, right? So there are no undead. There's just the infected who basically are photosensitive, right? Outside of that, they don't like technology. That's pretty much their defining trait. And also, as soon as you're infected, you're cult-like, right? So I mean, I do like the kind of like you mentioned as a very Cold War movie, the sort of like the virus is communism kind of,
Yes.
interpretation, right? But
And hippies are prone to it.
yeah, that is true. Yeah, I mean, those dirty hippies.
The thing that saved Charlton Heston was not his blood. It was his membership to the Republican Party that
There are a few scenes where he's gunning people down, where I think, oh, he's enjoying this a little too
Yeah.
much. He all but screams, "Cold dead hand."
Yes. Or, get your hands off me, you damn dirty hippie.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so I mean, no, it's not, he's not the last man on earth. This is not, there's no multiple categories of people. I mean, there's just, you can be cured, and being cured means you won't be photosensitive any longer. I mean, like, there's no real reason not to be infected, right? Except once you're infected, you automatically join the cult, right? Is the logic there. It's bizarre.
It is, yeah. So the family and the transition don't make any sense. And even with the finale, one of the things that this is kind of proud of, or the filmmakers are proud of, is the fact that it has this first, that they claimed at one point, or at least some people claim, is the first interracial kiss on screen. Apparently it's not. There were some others in the late 50s that sort of that or the late, sorry, 60s that superseded it. Not a problem. Fine. If you really wanted to go down this route, because again, I don't understand. I'm not entirely sure of the relationship between Richie and Lisa, and like you said, this organization, like, is that his mother? Is it his older sister? Don't know. All right. But there's almost like what, and again, I know what, I'm gonna rewrite some of this. All right. Simple things that even Heston could have done. He should have become, and there should be more to, because again, this film's an hour and a half. Like, it's not the longest film in the world. There should have been some time spent with him, with that group, and there is, but they could have done more that allows him to become like a father figure. Like, he becomes almost like a, well, I will teach you to, tie knots, or use a gun or, you know, become survive in some way. Like, it needs one of those elements for people to be like, oh, that's why they all look up to him. Like, that's, you know. So when that Richie makes that choice of going to try and talk to the family, like, it should be a bit of a shock, or and him going to rescue him should be like, I'm trying to save my new surrogate son or something like that. You know, there needs to be that relationship needs to be there to really trigger that. And it's not. So as you say, like, a lot of it just feels like it's an excuse for Neville to go around just shooting and shit and blowing stuff up. Like, the motivation very much is limited. If you're going to introduce, if he's on his own, right, last man on earth style, fine. All right. It's that thing of like, he's gone a little bit insane. This is survivors or like, you know, survival instincts. If you are going to introduce other survivors, you need to build a relationship in that group that makes it important that the group survive in some way, and that Charlton Heston's death should have been a sacrifice or more of a tragedy in some way, that, you know, he does save Lisa, or in some way, I don't know, he does something that takes out the family to protect the other survivors. But it's not, it's all kind of meaningless at the end of the day, that is kind of deflating when watching it.
No, I agree with you. And, you know, I also want to point out Lisa's there in the final scene in the day. I mean, they just pull her
That's
through
a
the
good
sunlight.
point.
I mean, yeah. So, you know, for me, you know, I think this gets back in my mind to the lack of characterization of those survivors at all, right? That I don't know what their dynamic is. I don't know really what Neville's relationship is with them, except, oh, good, there are other survivors. And so they survive and just kind of drive off like, you know, Scooby-Doo characters in the mystery van at the end. And, you know, I assume that he did save Lisa, right? That they're able to use that blood to, you know, restore her. But it doesn't feel like this was a great love story that he sacrificed for them. I mean, we get all the Christ metaphors, but as you say, you know, there's no personal relationship there, right? So, you know, you're right that it's missing that connection that would make that sacrifice mean anything. It's just, well, there are other people alive, and you know, really, he's not sacrificing for them. He's just killed.
But the film also, exactly. Like, it, you said it before, it's about a blood feud. But again, if you're going to have a blood feud in this similar way, then it needs to come to a fight between Matthias and Neville, where they both take each other out. That it needs to be one of those things of like, well, they're almost like a, oh, they've killed, almost like Romeo and Juliet, you know, or they've killed each other, therefore we, you know, we need to sort of stop this battling or whatever. Like, there needs to be some resolution, because the film also raises the question that Richie's asked is, and he asked it of Heston and then sacrificed, like, Richie sacrificed himself to kind of prove a point, is, are they wrong? Is, you know, the technology and everything is what led us to this bomb and to this biological warfare. Are they wrong? Is the family wrong to be taking this position, that science is bad? And it never comes back to it for anyone to say, you know, yeah, maybe they were, or no, we need the development of science is integral to the progression of humanity. So, you know, actually, they're wrong. Like, take a stance. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to ask that
I
question,
mean,
take a stance on it.
I think that the movie does, but I think that the family are just the villains, right? They're just the villains. And so, you know, technology does help, right? Because it develops, it does get a cure, right? Unlike other versions of this story, there really is a cure here. And Macho Man Randy Savage is the one who develops it. So, you know, technology wins out in the end, even though we're not really shown that too much. I mean, we see Richie recover, but, you know, and Richie's wrong because while there's no real reason for them to fight, the communists will not listen to reason. And the only thing they understand is force, and that's why we have to remain in Vietnam forever.
If that was the speech that Heston gave at the end of the film, then I would have been surprised, to be honest. But yeah, I think you're right. But they need to, it needs to hammer that, not so much hammer it home, but at least have that conversation of saying, like, someone, Richie, before he's killed off, then needs to say, are they wrong? You know, technology brought us to this point. Is it the wrong thing? And then someone needs to point out and say exactly what you've said. Well, technology is what saved your life. You know, so is it so wrong? You know, Lisa needs to confront him then and say, what are you saying? It's technology that brought you back to us. Like, we saved you with technology, da, 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 with science. You know, it's what will progress us. It's what will help humanity. Like, you need to fit a character to say, it doesn't have to be Charlton Heston. Like, someone just needs to take a stance on that and have that sort of, like, you know, shoot him down. And then if he runs off and going like, no, I wish you hadn't saved me, or whatever the fuck it is, fine. But like you say, it needs to be a bit more, rather than just Charlton Heston being like, you know, I'm going to go and shoot these people. I don't know. Yeah. If you're going to present that question, you need to be discussing it. And you say it sort of does, but in a really sort of roundabout and vague way.
I think you're right. I just think that the reason why the other survivors aren't characterized is because the movie doesn't care about them. The
Yeah.
movie cares about Charlton Heston, right? I mean, the movie cares about the white action hero. And I do think you're right. It wants him to be a little progressive, you know, for to display this interracial kiss. I mean, ironically, I think the world, the flesh, and the devil that we discussed for Patreon does a better job of addressing race relations than this does. But you know, it really seems as if for all of these themes, for all of these elements, for all of the interesting stuff here, and there is interesting stuff, it is really reduced to Charlton Heston as the white action hero. And everything just kind of drifts away compared to that. So, like, you want philosophical themes to be teased throughout? No, those philosophical themes are really just there to justify a little bit of depth behind, you know, the white action hero and his messianic sacrifice for people who aren't important in the story.
That's it. I will now refer to him as Macho Man Randy Heston. I think that's now his new name. Yeah, no, you are right. I mean, this film is very right wing in that sense. I mean, and again, I'm not talking about fascistic or anything like that. This is a very conservative film, isn't it? Like, it's that thing of, it wants to be progressive, but like in a small C conservative kind of way. It's not going to go, oh, we're full hippie-ish, but we're like, no, we still need science and guns and all this other stuff. Like, it's all, the way we are now is the best way we can be, kind of thing. And America is the best at it. So I do feel that that is definitely there, which is
Yeah.
fine as a position to take, especially during a Cold War. Like, I'm fine with that. That's not a problem to take that stance. Fine.
But take it,
Yeah,
right?
but take it.
Articulate
But
it.
exactly. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Like, I've got no problem with you taking a stance if that's what you're going to say, but say it. Yeah, no, it's fine. I think the ending is kind of funny, that, like, with, say, with the Christ sort of imagery and all that. It's the thing that we're coming back to is this idea of that, what is the point of Richard Matheson's book? And this isn't, it does credit, obviously, the book. It does, you know, inspired by or based on or whatever. Like, it's called The Omega Man. And the last, this is the thing I'm interested in, because the book is called I Am Legend, because that's the last line of the book. And it's the whole story leads up to that realization of Neville being like, oh, I'm the monster. Like, you know, I'm the other. Now I am legend. I am the monster kind of living under your bed kind of thing, whatever. But both films have avoided that title because they don't reach that conclusion. And I think that's an important point, is in both versions, they're like, yeah, we're not quite going there. Like, Last Man on Earth kind of wants to copy the book, but not do the same thing. You know, it never reaches, as you said, like, because that thing of I am legend is the acknowledgement of, not so much I am wrong, but like, I am no longer just a person trying to survive. And Heston definitely doesn't get to that. So again, I'll meet the Omega Man is almost the exact opposite. of not so much I am Legend because I'm wrong, it's I am the Omega Man because I'm a badass. I am the Macho Man Randy Heston is almost like the antithesis of what the book is trying to say. And so
Yeah, it's like,
what
what is the pitch for this movie, right? Like, I read this cool book. It's about one man versus an infected horde. You
Yeah.
know, like,
Yeah.
oh, okay. That's what you took away from it.
That kind of is, but that's exactly where I'm coming from. It's like, but what I'm interested in, when we get onto the Patreon to talk about I Am Legend in the Will Smith version, is that any closer? Does that try and do anything more? I don't think it does. I think they just take the novel title because that's the hook. But as I'm watching this, I kind of see that the book starts to fade into the background. Like the original book is really fading into the background. And Omega Man is almost like a loose adaptation and an extension of The Last Man on Earth. And I'm now wondering, is I Am Legend Will Smith, which was 2007, is that a loose adaptation of the Omega Man via The Last Man on Earth? Like, are we
Have
just
you seen it?
replicating Last Man on Earth? I Am Legend.
No, I am left. Yeah.
Yes, I have. Yes. And
Yeah, I
it's been a
have too,
while,
yeah.
but I'm gonna posit a theory now that I will solve on Patreon. So pay your dues, come and check it out. It will be on Patreon soon. Is it more a case of in Hollywood we are just readapting those movies and just looking at the movies rather than anyone actually re-picking up that book?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that, there is more concern these days with having a faithful adaptation, right? On the other hand, one also has to bow to one's predecessors, right? And adapt the things that work from them. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm with you. I mean, I don't even understand why you would bother saying this is an adaptation, right? Because, for the Omega Man, because really it's not like, we've done some. It's not like there haven't been stories before about sort of an apocalypse where, there's one survivor or something, there isn't one survivor here.
No, no. And that's it. It's the
So
I is gone. The I, the singular, is removed. And I think that's the point. I mean, I have just checked actually on one of the trivia points on IMDb. It just say the opening credit features the credit based on a book by Richard Matheson, but does not give the title of the actual book. So that's kind of, I think that's kind of telling. But I think the whole point of the Last Man on Earth, which is an adaptation, but also the book itself is the singular. The point is the singular is I am legend. It's the, but because you could almost have it at the start and end of it start with I am human, I am the last human, and end with I am legend, and that be the transition. It's about the I. It's about the book is about the arc of Nev of Robert Neville. And I think that one of the things that as you adapt this into a visual medium, or people have done, is gone, yeah, but we need to have the baddies. So they're either going to be zombie-like vampires or whatever, or they're going to be the family. And so they sort of, I think, this is, I'm a badass. That's what his dying breath would be. I don't
I am badass.
know.
That's the title of this.
Yeah, I am badass. I don't know. The singular is the most important point, and having watched the Will Smith version, I think it does address that again at the start of the film. I think it starts with that intent. It has the flashbacks. It has all those bits and pieces. It has the dog in a similar way. But again, I think it's gonna. It, I think, in fact, I know. We will discuss it. It has the same problem of. We can't have Will Smith
Be unlikable.
be unlikable. He can't be a he can't be the monster legend. And I think that's the problem. So I think that's the problem we'll come across. But let's see. Anyway, so
Well, it's worth pointing out that Matheson did not like either of these two
yeah.
adaptations, but he did say about Omega Man that it was so different than the book that he wasn't bothered. So, I mean, like, ironically, we've drifted so far from the source material that it's even hard for the originator of that source material to take offense,
He was just
right?
like, look, a check turns up in the mail. I'm fine. It doesn't quite, it doesn't even name my book in it. We're all good. Fine. Yeah. Fair enough. Any final thoughts then for the Omega Man?
No, I'm puzzled by why this is so influential, and it's not bad. I mean, I think we've had a, we've had fun with it, and I think one of the sort of patterns we've witnessed is that both of us sort of like these movies better when it's just a guy alone trying to, wandering around, going into the abandoned landscapes and all of that, and that is much more interesting than when you try to make it fit a conventional Hollywood plot, right? But I'm kind of confused. Tim Burton loves this movie. Lots of people love and praise this movie. I'm not entirely sure why. And the Anglo-Saxon bloodline, enough, said by Charlton Heston with no irony whatsoever, is, really hard to stomach.
It's one of those odd, it's an oddity to me, this film, is because we're coming at it from an adaptation of the source material, but also like it's 1971, so it's early 70s. It has almost like it's clearly being influenced by other cinema that's going on at the time. This is a transition period. That sort of blaxploitation, Shaft comes out the same year. So, Shaft comes out in 71, and as does Dirty Harry. So you're sort of looking at these times and going like, there's a real something going on in cinema at this point, especially around race and who the sort of those heroes are. So I'm, it's interesting from that standpoint, I think. As a sort of a moment in history, the moment in cinematic history. But as a film, it's like I said, the whole thing of him being a little bit kooky and having to deal with sort of, his eccentricities that have grown up over years of being alone are all kind of interesting. And Heston is kind of fun to watch for the first sort of 20 minutes. But when the second act, the end of the first act, and when it kicks in and he's sort of being saved and all this other stuff, and those other survivors are introduced, it weirdly kicks into like autopilot of what this kind of film should do. And I think we said it as well with the with but we did say it with Last Man on Earth, that it was kind of perfunctory. There was a lot of like, box ticking of like, this was in the book or this has got to happen. There's parts of this film that feel very much the same to me, where it's like, oh, we've got to have this and we're going to have this. And the relationship between Lisa and Neville, who's going to follow this trajectory. None of that is going to actually be portrayed in the acting, in the way that things are presented, just in the actions that take place. There will be dialogue that says, "I am flirting with you," and the response is, "I enjoy your flirting with me. Shall we go to bed?" Like it's kind of robotic. The kisses, the interracial kiss is incredibly uncomfortable and awkward, and it gets worse from there. And it kind of builds to what should be several gut punches at the end. Like this film, if done well, the moment that Richie, not just Richie betraying or attempting to betray the survivors group, but being killed for it, should be a real slap in the face. But it's kind of like a shoulder shrug, even to Charlton Heston. He's like, oh, that's a shame, and then moves on. And the same with Lisa, the reveal that Lisa has been infected and is being overtaken by the cult-like behavior should be a gut punch. Like it should have led up to that this is a real shame and his desire to save her. All of this should mean something, but none of it does. It has no impact, no weight, very little stakes. Parts of it look good, but generally I think it's kind of so ineffectual in what it wants to do, and I don't think it's sure it's what it wants to do, that it kind of just sort of does it and then leaves, and I'm left feeling cold to the whole thing, where I'm just like, oh, okay, well, again, it reaches inevitable conclusion because I sort of knew that had to happen, but I didn't care. I cared more about Vincent Price's death in Last Man on Earth, but even that's not great. So yeah, I don't know. I just feel that this one is again is a troubled adaptation, but in even drifting away from the source material, it doesn't drift away in order to achieve anything. Do you know what I mean? I don't mind it.
Yeah.
If you do an adaptation of a book, be like, we started with Pride and Prejudice or Jane Austen or whatever, but then, and we have taken it and we've redone this to try and tell it through the veil of a modern tale or through, you know, the modern gay, you know, perspective. Cool. Sounds good. You've taken it, you're adapting it for a purpose and with a point of view. Brilliant. Sounds good. Let's have that different story. This just sort of went, we want to shoot things, and all we could afford was people in hoods.
No, I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, and I think that, you know, I mean, we've seen, you know, in our own lifetimes, right, we've seen this happen with sort of some of those Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, right?
100%.
Where it's like, okay, we, you know, this has to be adapted in a way that turns it into an action movie, right? And I think this is a sort of precursor to that. And some of those are successful, right? They've turned it into something that works.
Total Recall.
Sort of. Yeah, exactly. And which we both love and have already talked about on the show. But no, this feels in that vein, doesn't it? Like, it's, you know, turning it into the full bloated action movie with a macho lead.
No, I agree. I 100% agree. I totally agree. This is almost, and I hadn't thought about it in this way in the past, but you are so right that this is a precursor to the actionification of literary source materials, where they're like, we've got this really cool story, but we need to punch it up. Literally, to make it more exciting, and you end up with this. And I just think, like, and funnily, like you say, even some of the action scenes are sort of like, some of them are great and some of them are quite interesting. There's a film called I'm Gonna Get You Sucker, a parody film of like black exploitation. It's a great film, really funny. But there's a joke in that about a woman, one of the female characters, goes to start doing backflips to sort of kick someone in the face. And they do a thing about how it's then basically a larger sort of black guy with a mustache who's the stuntman who's doing all the flips and stuff. And it's blatantly on screen, like it's done as a gag. And it's really funny. But I almost feel that in this film, like there were several occasions where Heston crashes his car or Heston's like riding a motorbike. And there are shots where I'm like, that dude's like got a full head of like dark brown hair and he's totally not Charlton Heston. And it's clearly not a person that sort of sat on the bike of the back of that motorbike. And you hear like, is that supposed to be like, that's not a joke. That's just bad sort of filmmaking. But it feels like it, where I'm going like, oh, this has got all those things that will later be parodied in films are here. And that's kind
of, you're
like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, especially that that stuntman, that driver of the motorcycle, who, you know, seems like he's got sort of like, you know, foot and a half long hair that's sort of like graying, and obviously is not Heston. And he sort of, at least he turns away from the camera, right? Like they're clearly aware of the problem,
apart from
not
one
aware
shot.
Enough.
There's one shot where they're on the motorbike escaping the football stadium and they're heading towards the gate and they're about to blow the gates over so they can jump the car. As it's coming towards the gate, there's almost like an almost head-on shot, and he clearly can't look away because he's riding a motorbike at speed and he has a lot of his going. So you do get for a couple of seconds like this head-on shot of the stuntman, and you're like, yeah, that's not Charlton Heston. Like, like blatantly, that's clearly someone else. So all those things which you could laugh at, you know, maybe that's the thing, you know, I could watch this film in a year or two and laugh at it in that sense of, you know, oh, this is almost what's totally wrong with Hollywood and this transition to the actionification of things. But it's almost a parody as well of itself, which is kind of funny. So
Well, stay tuned for the actionification of Pride and Prejudice. You know that Mr. Darcy, you know, I'm sick of him running his guns and drugs,
Yeah.
wanting to marry you.
That's, yeah. Yeah. Miss Bennet, you have offended me. Yeah, it's coming, Tanya.
Anglo-Saxon blood. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. It's an
Oh.
interesting, this has been an interesting film. But I'm interested to see, you know, how we do take on it. The next one comes, what, 30 years later. And we'll see how Will Smith does. Jump onto Patreon and we'll let you know that we're coming on the Patreon as we discuss and wrap up our I Am Legend little mini retrospective that we've
Trilogy.
done. Yeah, a little
Yeah.
trilogy. It's been great. But here, you know, we're not finishing. That's not the wrap up of our post-apocalyptic season. We've got more to do. Next is we're sticking with the 70s. More
Silent Running.
Silent Running.
And
Yes.
if this movie is a fascist, sort of conservative movie, that movie is very much the opposite.
Yes. It's a botanical delight, is what it's going to be. So we shall see how we go on with Silent Running. I've heard good things about Silent Running. It's one of those I've never seen, but I've heard interesting things about it. So,
It's an interesting movie. It's
yeah.
definitely worth discussing. And Joan Baez will usher you into a better world.
Well, yeah, you know, Charlton Heston tried, and you know, he failed. So let's see if somebody else can pass us into a better world. But yes, anyway, for now, ladies and gentlemen, if you like what we're doing, please go leave a review. You know, let us know what your thoughts on, and also contact us on social media at Pod Time Space on X and everything else, and just let us know what are your thoughts on this, and have you read I Am Legend and watched the films, and predict what we're going to think of I Am Legend 2007, and also if you want to know what we think about the next I Am Legend film with Will Smith, come and join the Patreon. There is a link down below. It's just out there. It's www.patreon.com. You can search for 20th Century Geek Media. It's on there. And even at the lowest tier, you will get our thoughts on I Am Legend. So come and join. And it'd be fantastic. But for now, Julian, thank you very much. It's been a
Thank you so much, Scott.
wonderful examination. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. And we shall see you on the next episode.